Under the skin.
Welcome to Under the Scales. I'm Tom Marshall, your host. Under the Scales is a proud member of the growing family of music and culture podcasts on OSIRIS, where, if you like this podcast, you'll find many others you will enjoy at osirispod.com. This episode is about Waterwheel, Phish's nonprofit charitable organization. We'll be talking with three people instrumental in the formation and execution of this tremendously successful charity, which benefits clean water initiatives among many other causes. I want to thank Stephen Koshland and Jeff Asher for suggesting and helping to propel this interview forward. You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and for every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood, where you get news from every source, where you can listen to my favorite, the newly launched Phish Radio. I was really happy that the famous Ari Fink from SiriusXM grabbed me in the back hallways of the recent concert at Mohegan Sun and asked me a couple questions, and my friends tell me that it's already on the air, which is exciting to me. Thanks, Ari. You can also listen to Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. And you can listen to the top comedy channels, such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix is a Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN. Most people think that you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just $1. Visit SiriusXM.com/scales to subscribe and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. We're proud to be sponsored by CBD Vermont. They believe that healthy soils, strong local economies, and plant-based wellness go hand in hand. That's why they work with organic farmers across Vermont to grow the highest quality hemp and produce full-spectrum CBD extracts for wholesale. They've recently launched an online store where you can buy Vermont-made CBD products, including oils, capsules, edibles, and topicals that have been fully vetted by the staff at CBD Vermont. I've mentioned my favorite before, and that's the Nutty Steph CBD Dark Chocolate. Each square contains 5 milligrams of the purest CBD available, and as it melts on your tongue, you taste chocolate and natural hemp. It's actually an amazing combination. There's nothing in the bar except coca, cane sugar, and pure plant CBD. Get it online or at the CBD Vermont store in Waterbury, Vermont. They ship everywhere. And as huge music fans, they're offering our listeners 15% of all products. Go to cbdvermont.com and use the code UNDERTHESCALES at checkout to get 15% off. Welcome to Under the Scales. I am in Saratoga, New York with Henry Schwab, who is, if any of you have been following Phish, you probably know his face, even if you don't know his name. He's been with Phish very, very long. How long, Henry? When was the first time that you became involved with Phish? And I'll explain how in a moment.
Well, I first saw Phish at Poplar Creek outside of Chicago in 1992 when they were opening for Santana.
Ah, okay. And then that sort of rapidly will be where our story starts, because this is a Waterwheel interview. However, there's some prehistory that Henry's able to provide as to how it actually got started. And why don't you go do that? Because it happened right around that time with the Santana tour, right?
Yeah, we were lucky that Greenpeace International was able to have a tour project where they were following different rock and roll bands around the country, and they were following Santana. And Michael Hayes was the Greenpeace employee. And he set up a booth at all the Phish shows that summer of 92 and really hit it off with the band. And he asked Trey if he could come back for a fall tour. And Trey loved the idea and the band loved the idea. And they said, Greenpeace, we'd love to have you this fall. And at that time, I was 19 years old, turning 20. And I started following the band when really no one was following the band for more than 3 or 4 shows. And I asked Mike if I could start helping out at the table, and Mike let me come in every night for free. And from that point on, we had two people at the Greenpeace table every night at every fish show through 1997.
And the idea, of course, was to solicit donations, just sort of like a good vibe. We're on tour. It's a way of spreading the word kind of thing.
Yeah, the band let us do whatever we wanted to educate, to raise awareness. And each tour, we would ask for one more thing that could help us out. And Amy Skelton, the Fish's first fan, was running all the merchandise for the band. And she had a Penske truck, and she'd drive around with all the stuff. And she was kind enough to let us keep our stuff in her van. And then she was able to give us merchandise that she got in the lot that wasn't really legal, kind of trademark stuff, and would tell the fans that she had to take it from them, but they were going to give it to a good cause, and they'd give it to us at Greenpeace. And then we'd start raising money. And Amy at that time was probably the biggest supporter of Greenpeace financially.
Oh, that's awesome. For that reason, because yeah. She was providing you guys with merch, so to speak. That's funny. So fans that were making technically illegal shirts could then buy them back from Greenpeace if they wanted.
Yeah, it was mostly stickers, but it was in a pretty amazing time. And then the following tour, we asked Brad Stans, who was the road manager at that time, if we could also do a raffle for backstage passes. And they asked the band, and the band was great and allowed us to do a raffle every night for two backstage passes. And the fans used to give us money, donations, and they would be able to go back and maybe meet a band member or get some chips and salsa. And it was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And then one day I met Patrick Jordan, who is now one of the people that works for the band. And I asked him for a favor. He goes, "Oh, yeah, anything for you, Henry. You were the first person to ever get me backstage."
Huh.
And now he's one of the big hierarchies in the organization. So
he is.
He's really affected a lot of people.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's some names that you brought up there, like... I mean, certainly Amy, she goes by first fan all the time. And she really did go when there was one or two people in the room with Fish, which is amazing. So Greenpeace toured from 93 to when with Fish?
Yeah, summer of 92 to summer of 97. And by 1997, the Greenpeace tour project had stopped operating in the U.S., so we had to figure out a new thing to do. And by that point, Greenpeace has already helped start the G Crew for the kids that did all the recycling at the shows and the backstage recycling. And you see it now with all the other organizations around the country that do that. But back then, it was Michael Hayes who was running Greenpeace's idea to bring that to Fish, and Fish was totally behind it. And by 97, we asked Fish if there would be the opportunity to take their Water Wheel Foundation, which had just started from the Ben & Jerry's fish food ice cream, where all the profits would go to protect Lake Champlain, and then bring it on tour. And that summer 97 going into fall, we started having discussions to see if that was a possibility. And then our idea was, since we're already bringing different nonprofits to help us at fish shows, like Cannabis Action Network and other local organizations, that instead of doing that through Greenpeace, we would just do it through Water Wheel, where Water Wheel would find a local nonprofit organization that was small and grassroots and was really doing great stuff in the community, and invite them to the concert and raise money for them using environmentally friendly merchandise through dry goods. And that's when we pitched the idea to their manager at the time, John Paluska, Cynthia Brown, who was running their dry goods at the time, Beth Montori, who now runs Water Wheel, Amy Skelton, and to the band, and seeing if they liked the idea.
Today, remaining, as you said, in this particular organization, Water Wheel, is of those, you, Beth, and Maddie Beck.
Yeah, Matthew Beck, Green Skies manager and Water Wheel tour project manager, run the program. And Maddie, that we call him, was someone that I found in the parking lot in Austin, Texas, with his brother just walking around. And I went up to them because one of my jobs was to find people to come in and help at the tables and volunteer and learn about Water Wheel and Greenpeace and what we were working on. And Matthew was excited and to come in and help out at the shows. And he started coming in every night, just like I used to do it, and volunteering and helping. And soon after that, he was just proven to do such a great job that he was hired full time to run it on the road.
That's amazing. So, backing up a little to your to the origins with Greenpeace and when you were like scouring the lot for people to help you and stuff like that, you mentioned that it was run by a gentleman named Michael Hayes. Is he still involved with Greenpeace? What's he up to?
No, Michael moved up to Homer, Alaska, and had a family up there, and he's been living up there since. And he was part of that Midwest Michigan roots that Maddie's also from, and I'm from Chicago, and we used to just have conversations on what we thought was best for the environment and the best groups we could find and the best staff members and bring people in and train them. And we were able to have people come in and even get college credits from us at that time.
Wow.
To travel around the country and learn what we were doing. And what's amazing, and one of my favorite things about Greenpeace and Waterwheel over the years, is you've met people that have learn from those kind of programs that we've been working on and now work for other nonprofit organizations all around the country. And it just shows like what a touch point those tables at shows have been for so many people.
When you see it being paid forward that way, where the people that you touched, like you said early, are now helping others, that's incredible, the ripple effect.
Yeah, just in particular, Matthew Beck, who now runs it and manages Green Sky and does so much work in the community and has touched so many people positively through environmental work and nonprofit work. It's just, it's really powerful to see. And again, over the last 22 years now, since we started Waterwheel on the road, Beth Montori has just been the guiding force of being upstanding and working hard and that old school fish Northeast work ethic, which Paluska put on us too. It's like you always had to do something. You always had to work hard and believe in something and give your best. And it's just amazing to see how much money they raise now, how much positive energy they put out to the community, and how Fish and their fans should just be so proud of the work.
That's beautiful. Well, I, for one, didn't know the origins were a little bit rooted or, you know, began with the Greenpeace idea. And I remember seeing you guys everywhere. You toured with Fish even over in Europe, as you were saying, like the Santana stuff, right?
Yeah, and we worked for other bands like REM, U2, Santana, Smashing Pumpkins, Allman Brothers. It was a great national program, but we always wanted to come back for Fish. There was nothing like the band and the energy that they gave us, from those after show passes to the stickers to they even put us on their crew tour bus. They fed us, they put us in hotels. I mean, they really cared about the work we were doing and were really proud. And it was always great when Paige would come by the table and he would always want to see what kind of merchandise the fans were making of him. And he'd get so excited. He'd smile and be like, that's a really good idea. And, the band has always been supporting us 100%.
That's great. Is Greenpeace still touring, as far as you know, with other bands?
No, they stopped in 97. Probably their mistake, because there was such opportunities, but Waterwheel picked it right up and became kind of a leader for other bands of what they're doing today. When you see the kind of work other bands are doing with the recycling and the voter registration.
Yeah.
Greenpeace and Waterwheel used to invite Rock the Vote into the shows, and we would have them at all the shows, and now you see how it's just exploded as a different organization now. But Fish was always ahead of the curve on doing positive work. In 1996, they allowed the Cannabis Action Network to table at all their shows, and now you can see it finally got legalized, but that, you know, they were doing the work 23, 24 years before, allowing us to sell hemp clothing. Always a progressive organization.
That's nice. Now, you are currently, I see you in the audience just as a fan. Is that right? Are you involved at all with the organization anymore?
What I try to do now to help and is through the art side. I helped start a Facebook art group called Fish Inc., I-N-K. And what we do is we allow fans to sell, trade, and buy fish-related artwork, and just to show off the art they have and the fan art that they make and the frames. And it's just a great meeting spot for people to talk about all fish-related art. And we've been working with Jim Pollock and Jenny and David Welker and other artists to get their art donated to Waterwheel for the Waterwheel events they have, and just have the fan art donated and get people to help raise money through the group's platform, every time you're able to buy or sell or trade for art, we ask that you make a donation back to Waterwheel. And we also use the group to educate people on Waterwheel events.
So Henry, just to draw the distinction between potentially two groups here involved with fan art in general, I had Peter on who runs events prior to shows with lots of fan art, but that is different from your Facebook group, right? Could you tell me a little bit about the difference?
Sure. Our Facebook group is an all-encompassing group of anything fish art related, from official art that the band will sell to art that fans make. Peter runs events before certain shows called Fan Art, and when he announces those events, we promote them, we let people know where they're at, and we try to tie in our page to his events as much as we can. Peter's done great work getting all the fans that have done art out to the broad community, and at this point, there are so many amazing people doing great art. I know you had Andrea on, who does the photography.
AZM Pics.
And she's one of my favorite people always.
Yes.
You know, I have her art up in my house.
Me too. I think we all do. It's like, it's such amazing stuff. Just with a simple camera or phone, she's got such a good eye. Yeah, no, I love that stuff.
Yeah, her Trey acoustic work on the East Coast was just unbelievable.
Yep, that's really great. I wanted to ask you, you touched upon the G Crew, and I remember it was a way that people without money or tickets could still come on tour, and is... You implied that that's kind of still going?
G Crew is the oldest thing that Greenpeace started that's still active out there. 94 summers where it started, and we only had four people back then. And it was pretty amazing.
And essentially, you clean the garbage that, you know, everyone just inevitably leaves behind after a show, right?
Yeah, the focus was on recycling more so than garbage. To get like cans and bottles up. Of course, some garbage was picked up just because the kids believed in making everything as clean as you could. But the goal was try to get as much stuff recycled as we can. And then we started doing it backstage, and we did it at catering, and then we'd have to call waste management. Michael Hayes, I always heard him on the phone with some interesting characters trying to get them to drop off these huge containers. And no one at that point was doing it. We really helped start the trend that you see all the time now with recycling. But it was really exciting and powerful to be part of that kind of movement with G Crew. And after that, of course, we brought in Fellowship, which was the drug and alcohol free people.
Oh, yeah.
Which was based off the Wharf Rats that they did at the Grateful Dead shows. And that started off really small. And they're also one of the longest continuous organizations that's still been working with fish, even older than Waterwheel at this point. But I was told recently from Matthew that even Trey comes out and checks up on their work. And
yeah, that's our friend Paige Clem, of course, who started that. Yeah, and she's doing such a great job with that. And I love that. And thank you so much for being a super fan and starting all these incredible initiatives. And I am glad to see so many of them continuing today.
Yeah, it's amazing to be on this show. I listen all the time, and you've had some great people on it, and I'm happy to be able to talk some about the fish history that people might not know about because happened a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it's definitely worthwhile, and you've been working really hard, so I like to shine a little light, you know, get under the scales and really see what's going on here. A lot of the stuff people take for granted, but also, you know, tremendous good that has been done and is still going on behind the scenes. Of course, you can donate, you can get on your Facebook group, Fish Inc., and you can also go directly to Waterwheel. There's all kinds of ways to help, and I guess you can still be on the G Crew if you want. How do you find that if you want?
They have a Facebook group, too, and you can always look for them at the shows.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Henry. This has been great.
Thanks, Tom.
Now the Under the Scales mobile studio has moved to Boston, Massachusetts, where I just saw the first night of a wonderful concert at Fenway. And I'm here with two guests, Beth Montori-Rolls and Maddie Beck. How are you guys?
Great.
Doing well, thank you.
So in the previous segment, I talked to Henry, who's setting us up for what the actual topic is. We talked a lot about basically Greenpeace and how that originated on Santana Tour. Then they were basically from 93 to 96 or 97 on tour with Fish. And then that initiative was kind of copied with other bands, and that was occurring with Henry primarily scouting for volunteers. And he even told the story of finding you out on lot, Maddie.
That's funny.
Yeah, I was involved in the Cannabis Action Network and the Sierra Blanca Foundation and a few other philanthropic endeavors, and we crossed paths, and it was kind of the sunset of Greenpeace in that summer of 97.
Right. And it kind of, I don't think I realized, you know, despite my view from the inside a little bit, that the second Greenpeace stopped, that the Water Wheel Initiative kind of started. How did that occur, Beth?
Well, so Greenpeace sort of as an organization, this is my understanding anyways, pulled back from their artist touring initiative that they had and became more back to their grassroots activism initiatives that they, I think, still continue. And at the same time, a couple of years process of creating fish food occurred. And there was just sort of this meeting that happened at that point where Henry came to, started kind of asking around in the organization if he could, if we could create our own thing that would sort of replicate what Greenpeace was doing. And the fish food part of it made us create a nonprofit, like actually organize it and put a name on it. Prior to that, the band had been donating money out into our local community in Burlington.
Right.
But it wasn't formalized under a foundation name.
It wasn't a charitable foundation.
It was just out of the band's Fish Inc. company.
Interesting. Yeah.
But all of these things kind of came together.
Right.
And then we had the Water Wheel Foundation.
So it sort of implied, so Greenpeace, you guys got donations and volunteers from during touring and stuff like that. This one seemed to come with funding right away. You know, a portion of fish food was promised always.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so you guys needed to formalize that
endeavor. And Ben and Jerry's wanted to put something on the packaging because back then there was a blurb on the packaging that said, you know, where the money was going.
Oh, that's great.
So Mike came up with the name, the Water Wheel Foundation.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask. I thought that might be yours.
No, Mike is the namer.
So there's a little bit of, a lot actually of introductions needed here. So Beth, you've been with Fish. You and I were just talking. You might be the third longest employee.
Second, I think. But
second?
Yeah.
Second to
well,
CK5.
Richard. Well, that's true.
Okay.
Chris Carota.
Yeah.
Richard, myself.
Okay.
But Richard and I, very technically, Richard and I started on the same tour, but I think he physically hit the ground running before I did.
That's amazing. And you are, to me, you are Fish Inc. because you're the face, you're the person who answers the phone. In the old days, there was a phone, right?
Yeah.
But any kind of question that comes through organizations that want to do stuff with Fish, you're kind of that frontline person, aren't you?
I am.
So your Water Wheel, your Fish Ink, your Jemp, are you dry goods?
Yeah, not really. I'm Who Is She Music. I run the publishing company.
Right.
I mean, in some ways, I'm sort of the suit, you know, because I really run these business entities.
Yes.
That aren't the non-touring entities,
right.
You know. So
that's what I call Fish Ink.
Yeah, it
and
is.
And like when I have
that's my paycheck.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I was going to say. When I have to interface with Fish, like you know, for money or business things, that's what I call Fish Ink. Right.
Yeah.
When I interface with Fish, otherwise it's with Trey.
Yeah, that's me. I work for the four band members. Those are my immediate bosses.
Oh, okay.
You know, so. And that's not normal for most people who you kind of think of as working for the band. Not everybody is that. Some of them are off with vendors and,
I see.
You know.
Right. Now, Maddie, you've been around, as we said earlier, since first with Greenpeace and then with Water Wheel. Is that right?
It was that summer that Greenpeace sunsetted and then that fall Water Wheel launched. And so I was kind of just very much in the right place at the right time and, you know, hungry for something bigger. And I think, as Beth described, there was a perfect storm that had come together with the fish food ice cream and the touring operations. And Mike and Henry had both been at it for a while. And while they maintained during the early Water Wheel days, they were slowly moving on to different things individually. And it allowed some space for me to kind of swell into the organization and assume the role that I've taken on now.
So just for the purpose of fans who might not know what Water Wheel is, we've said that it's a charitable organization. It's the band's charitable arm, so to speak. How big is it? What's involved? Is there staffing? How much money possibly trades hands, or how much have you given away in grants? That kind of
okay,
stats.
So that's a lot of questions, Tom. So let's see. Water Wheel was created in 1997. There's a couple of different components to Water Wheel on a regular basis that I'm pushing forward. There's the touring initiative that Maddie runs. There's a local initiative that we give money locally into our community and into the communities that the band members live in, because they don't all live in Burlington, Vermont anymore. And also the Ben and Jerry's Lake Champlain. In addition to that, we've had some other things that have popped up, most recently Tortola, and then that Tropical Storm Irene Fund that we did back in 2011. And I, for lack of, we're not a company that has titles, but for descriptive purposes, I'm the executive director of the Water Wheel Foundation. I would like to note, though, that I do not actually take a salary from Water Wheel. So I do get paid by the band to do my job, but none of it comes out of Water Wheel. I have a part-time assistant in Burlington, Alice, who does a terrific job. She's one who's been bumping up our social media in the past year and a half. And then I also have somebody who works for me, James, who is our poster guru, because posters have become such an important part of how Water Wheel
raises money.
Yeah. So James, I've always tried to find somebody who comes in as a volunteer who kind of falls in that direction and then will really, you know, concentrate on it and
organize
get into
and
the
contact
details.
Artists and that type
Not
of thing?
Not necessarily organize and contact artists, but keep on top of what the community is following, you know, like the artists that they hold up besides the obvious ones, you know,
right.
The Jim Pollocks of the world,
yes.
You know, and the David Welkers. And so, anyways, that's, you know, James probably works about 4 or 5 hours a week,
okay.
You know, during the school year, because he's
so
still
like
in college.
So like a staff of three kind of that sit in an office, but then there's the touring side that you said.
Yeah, well, also in the office, I always have had an intern program that's credit interns.
Oh.
So there might be, I might have five people
oh, wow.
working
okay.
for me. You know,
all right. And that can be anything, like whatever, like put this stuff into boxes and get it ready to go on tour.
Yeah, or help us. Now it's sort of like I'm bringing somebody in for this semester coming up who's going to really help Alice on content. You know, so hopefully we'll see more content because that's what the goal is.
All right.
But some of it is like admin type of work.
I'll be watching the Water Wheel Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is at Water Wheel, right?
Yeah.
Water Wheel Fish.
At Water Wheel Fish?
Yeah.
Okay, good clarification. Now, there's another introduction that's needed. So Maddie, I've seen you around forever, and I think got to know you when I saw you carrying a beautiful little child around. How old is your baby now?
My lovely daughter, Marigold, is now 2.5.
2.5. And I remember saying to you, like, daughters are the best. And like,
they truly are. And I never could have anticipated it, but it's been the greatest delight.
It's just amazing. And where do you call home? Where do you live?
I'm in Arcata, California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on the North Coast.
I always see you on tour, so you're never not working when they're
yeah,
touring.
Yeah, I ostensibly head up the touring side of it. You know, Beth lays a lot of plans, and we work together to lay a lot of plans on the front, whether it's new merch designs or what we're going to do and where we're going to direct these things. I also select the groups, the beneficiaries that we support on tour.
Ah, they're worth mentioning. You guys, I saw a stat that you've given over $1 million to 425 groups. Is that an old stat?
It's a little old.
So,
that's what happens when you
Alice
have...
Alice needs to update that.
It's not really her fault. I did ask her to like kind of try to count things up. It's not
okay.
really her. So that would just be on the touring end of things, of course, because for the Lake Champlain work that we're talking like $4 million,
oh, wow.
over $4 million to Lake Champlain.
Oh, beautiful.
But on tour, we're well above $1 million at this point, probably half again. And we're probably at 450 5,400 in, because what happens is over time, the relationships that we have with different nonprofit organizations, we would invite them back. So if you're talking about individual organizations, which that 425 actually is individual organizations, but that's again just the touring initiative.
And some of those are duplicated, like you said.
Yeah, so big
five
time.
Years it's a lottery. Later, right. We'll have somebody back that we like in a market.
That's awesome.
Conservation Law Foundation.
But we're
is a great
like,
example.
You know, after Coventry, we chose 100 organizations to give, not up in that area. You know, there were 100 organizations essentially that we gave money to, just about, you know, so.
What was the
and I don't think those aren't there? Counted into the 400.
What was the thinking there?
You know, just because the whole Coventry thing was just such a.
You wanted to give back to the Coventry
community?
So well
supported by that community at the end of the day that we wanted to give back to
and
them.
It kind of got devastated by a storm and then just overrun by.
We just did a similar thing, you know, with our festival last year.
Oh.
Curveball.
Right.
Where we just gave all the proceeds from the merchandise sales to that community.
Right.
For their terrible water issues that they had.
Absolutely. Seems like there's a water theme here.
You know, I said at one point during Curveball, I said, isn't it ironic that I've spent the past 24 years or so, you know, working on water quality issues, and here comes Mother Nature just taking us out.
Right.
You know, I'm like, there's some irony there.
Possibly reminding us of how important this water stuff is, like India's 10th largest city, Chennai, ran out of water. That's an industrial hub. It's lots of programming that, you know, benefits United States companies happens in Chennai. And imagine going to work and there's no water. You can't work without it's this, and then hospitals are closing down. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's just an indicator of what's going to happen. That's not
the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that's not a unique situation.
We could be in big trouble, is what you're saying.
There's going to be
water wars.
The next world war will be over water potentially.
You think?
Yeah, exactly. We're shipping water overseas. You know, I mean,
we
it's
are?
Real. Yeah.
You mean like bottled drinking water?
Tankers with water in them.
Overseas.
Yeah.
Because we have so much here and the rest
currently,
of the world is just thirsting.
But you
That's
go
awful.
To some places in the United States. So when we were in, I'm a big skier. We go out to Utah often. And our driver, when we were coming back last spring, was telling me that the Great Salt Lake is going to become a seasonal water body within the next decade.
Meaning
because
only seasonally will it have water in it.
The development there is drawing off so much of the water that would go into the Great Salt Lake that it's going to be a seasonal water.
Well, you drive,
eventually.
You fly over that area and you see like, you know, the
it's
salt
nutty.
Beds, which were water at one point. So that's kind of what's happening there.
Yeah.
As we suck more water out of the
aquifer. The population grows, so you use more. But then you also have larger corporate interests, these Nestle's who are paying nothing and draining the Great Lakes and draining California for profit, shipping it all over the place. And just as a model overall, long term, we haven't set ourselves up for sustainability. It's been a short term profit driven perspective.
Yep.
And in order for us, I believe, as a species and a planet, to have a brighter future or any really future at all.
Any future at all.
We're truly going to have to have a deeper perspective of what these things mean. These things that have been commodified for profit are the core essence of our survival. And I think that's a major pole change that's going to happen culturally in order for us to continue.
It does seem that way. Like maybe some of your guys' funding could go to making desalinization more efficient, although that has that bad side product called salt, which is also becomes a pollutant in concentrated amounts. You don't want to take salt and just
dump it
somewhere.
Someplace, right?
Yeah,
it's highly complicated. It really
just
is.
Ends up back in the water eventually.
Because it seems like we're an ocean planet. We shouldn't have water problems, and yet a percentage of drinking water compared to that ocean water is so tiny and getting smaller. That's awful. I interrupted myself when I was in the middle of the getting to know Maddie segment of this thing. There's one more. Well, at least one more amazing thing apart from your being a recent dad, and that is. Your band that you're managing on the side has become an incredible band and very well known, and just played at the Capitol Theater in New York, right?
Yeah, recently they did.
Yeah, and that's Green Sky Bluegrass.
Correct.
And congratulations on that.
Thank you very kindly. Yeah, I'm a very, very lucky guy. You know, I get to work with Phish and Waterwheel and Green Sky Bluegrass, who I consider to be some of the finest musicians and people on the planet. And it's inspiring to be engaging in a very complicated world in a way that brings a lot of joy to people. I think in as much as it's complicated and scary, it's important that we are deriving joy and finding a more balanced place so we have patience with each other and the process. And I think that music is very core to that. And so I feel very, very privileged to get to earn a living by working with these incredible organizations.
Music feeds like the good centers in us somehow.
Indeed.
That's great. So I was thinking how lucky for a band to get their start by someone who's been on tour with, well, I mean, arguably one of the best road acts.
Absolutely. There's no limit to the insights I have gained over the years and how this business has operated. And it's been very intentional, which I think separates it from a lot of other organizations. Music can be very spontaneous, and I think sonically Phish excels there. But as an organization, they've been very, very intentional. And I think that there's so much to be learned there and putting one foot in front of the next and really just not getting ahead of yourselves and tying your shoelaces together kind of thing. And I think Phish has really excelled at that.
Well said. And you must still be in the search for a Beth equivalent in your organization.
I don't know that there is such a thing.
He's offered me a job a few times.
Oh, jeez. So for any charitable organization, and I think we kind of went over this and it might be obvious, but let's just talk again a little bit about where the money comes from.
All right. So normally, let me see. The best way to describe this is it's sort of like... I say this so much that it's kind of...
It's innate in you.
Yeah, exactly. So here's a way that I describe Waterwheel when people kind of come into my office and like are asking for funding, you know.
That's me. Pretend I'm that guy.
Like I try to... Because normally they don't really know. They just know that the band's probably got money and that there's this thing, the Waterwheel Foundation, that exists. And they get to me, you know, through our website or what have you.
Right.
And so I always explain to them the sort of... way that I think about it, where there's these three different components, which I said earlier. And then the touring part of it, that is really, and the organization is supported by the fans, the touring part of it for the most part, because it's the fans' donations that come in to our tables.
And that's walking by a table and throwing $5 into a jar.
Yeah, or getting a poster or buying one of the t-shirts
merch.
that, you know.
Of course, okay.
And, but a lot of people do just come up and give us a donation, which is really quite incredible and very impressive.
This many years down the road, I think they have a lot of faith in who we're engaging with. And so we do see people who just walk by and drop money and they don't look twice to see where it's going.
Yeah,
it's
pretty amazing.
Have faith in us. And that really is inspiring.
Knowing that it's doing some good, and that has to do with the integrity that you guys have built over time. There's nothing more, valuable, obviously, to a charitable organization and its integrity and the thought that, you know, your money that you donate is going to go to something good and not split off to salaries and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, it does. So the touring part of it, we do pay Maddie's salary. And then we have Jeff, who's the volunteer coordinator as well, table coordinator. We don't have titles, so it's kind of...
Like,
you know,
a flat organization.
Yeah, exactly. And Jeff gets a salary, and we pay for Maddie and Jeff to their expenses to stay on tour. So there are some overhead costs there.
Right.
And then we have Dawn, who's the other table chief, and Dawn gets a per diem. And everyone else that you see behind the tables are volunteers.
Wow.
So we have really low overhead. The band doesn't charge overhead costs onto like my office in Burlington. The money, and I'm not taking a salary, so the money is really, the fan money that's coming in is really covering these minimal costs compared to what they could be.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the tour, I do all the accounting for it, figure out how much money we have left over, and divide that among all the nonprofit organizations that we hosted during the tour.
Oh my God. Okay. And prioritizing that must be... that's just your magic that you do, right?
Yeah.
To me, that would be like... How who gets what, but
like I said, I'm a suit. So I do a lot of accounting work. Yeah, exactly. It's a, much harder to figure out how to divide up publishing royalties for what it's worth than the Waterwheel Foundation.
Well, and that's my world again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I do that as well.
Yeah. You and I have talked business quite a bit over 30 however many years. Yeah, and it's no exact science, and you guys establish and create precedent often when, you know, you even told me that bands call you and ask you, how do you do that?
Yeah, they do.
Licensing type questions.
Yeah, exactly. And
stuff. I imagine you must get charitable organization questions as well.
I do. So when we first started Waterwheel, I tried to get myself onto a board, another charitable board of another nonprofit, because I wanted to know like the ins and out of running a nonprofit organization.
Right.
Because all of a sudden we had one, you know, and nobody, it was Craig McKenzie, myself, John Paluska, and Amy Skelton, like running the Waterwheel Foundation, and we had no idea what we were doing. So I just sort of stayed. So I'm involved in all these different nonprofits. I chair the Burlington City Arts. I'm the president of Burlington City Arts. I have different titles there. I can't remember them, of course, right? And I chair Vermont Parks Forever, which is a foundation for the Vermont State Parks. And I'm on the Conservation Law Foundation's advisory board in Vermont, which I've been on forever. That was one of the first organizations that we were supporting with the Ben & Jerry's money. And so, but that was, people want me to chair their organization, right. You know, because Waterwheel is so successful.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you can probably only say yes to so many because your time, you know, from fish alone is a lot that you put in. Well, I want to talk a little bit. I mean, obviously, water is another irony. Not only that, Curveball became a water issue. Another irony is that you, Waterwheel, is attached to a band whose lyrics are primarily about water.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So many people have asked me, why is there water in all your lyrics? And I honestly have no idea. But I think it's good that we have a Waterwheel Foundation, too.
Well, isn't that some of, like, partially because of Trey's Tortola breaks that
some
led to
them,
him
yeah.
song
of course
song,
yeah like yeah. And like a lot of the Billy Breathes the writing sessions as you know, because you helped book some of those places where we go, which is always wonderful and a great surprise to me, are either near the beach or in you know, the Cayman Islands,
right,
or in Bermuda, the Bahamas. So yeah, there's often water nearby. And maybe that does like leak in somehow. Like coffee that slowly leaks out. but the other problem, of course, very visible to people and people are aware of nowadays, are water bottles, plastic water bottles. And you guys have addressed that with the water bottle program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that, so we work with Reverb on tour as on a consulting basis. And I'm pretty sure that it was Tanner's pushing us to consider doing this water bottle program, and it seemed to fit better with Waterwheel than with the traditional merch line. So at Magna Ball, we ordered 9,000 water bottles. I ordered 9,000 water bottles.
The Nalgene
through Reverb. They have a deal with Nalgene, right? And you know, got the band's blessing and the merchandising company blessing to do that and then divert that money over to Waterwheel versus going into the festival merch pool.
And that was a little bit of an evolution from a backstage program. We had started doing a lot of tour greening on the road, which I headed up for many years. And so every time we'd come out on tour, the whole crew would get a reusable coffee cup and a reusable water bottle, and we'd set up water stations backstage.
They still do, too.
Absolutely. I just don't head it up at this point. But so we took some big strides there, started using biofuel on all the buses and offsetting the carbon and, you know, things that maybe in the case of a touring operation may seem like drops in the bucket, but we're very much intended to lead by example. So when you've got 40,000 people or whatever at Fenway who are looking from the outside in at this, you're very much trying to lead by example. And then I think Beth found a great way to transition that further into the practice of the fan base.
Right. So and the fans, people, yeah, the band can and employees can be mandated almost to act a certain way. But they're, you know, the set a good example is the best way to do it. But you're right, the fans themselves, how do we stop them from buying throwaway plastic water bottles, right?
Right. Maybe there's 50 or 100 of us on tour at most, and you know, every night there's tens of thousands of fans. So it's about inspiring this motion,
changing changing the way we drink water.
I will say too that my coworkers thought that I had lost my mind when I had 9,000 water bottles delivered. They were like, "You're never going to sell those," and you know, we're going to be shipping a ton of them to Music Today, and I think in a day and a half, they were gone.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they sold instantly. So, you know, kudos to the fans.
They only had one night of troubled sleep.
Kudos to, kudos to the fans for, like, because it started raining on them, and, you know, they were underneath tarps. It was
that is
in
amazing.
The Quartermaster. So, anyways.
I might have one. Is that? No, this is
similar.
This is something else. This
that's
is,
a curveball.
That's curveball, right.
Which, again, like curveball, we bought 10,000 of them, and the fans bought maybe over 6,000 of them
after the fact,
after
obviously,
the fact. Right.
since
after,
we never filled the site.
Yeah. And you guys made it clear that the proceeds were going to help that local
they
area.
Went to Schuyler County there.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome. You mentioned, you touched on the storm Irene, and in New Jersey we had prepared for, you know, an actual hurricane strike, and it might have come on shore just south of us, I think. And the weird thing about it, yes, there was some high wind, trees uprooted, blah, blah, blah. But it was gone like that. And the damage just, you know, was the damage of a storm passing through immediately. Then it sat on top of Vermont for days and just dumped water.
Right.
And became an incredible water disaster.
Right. It was a tropical storm by the time it hit us, but it had so much moisture that it just came down. And it came down the slopes of the Green Mountains into these...
The valleys and towns.
Valleys. And these little tiny, and for the most part, like Burlington didn't really have much damage, but these little towns that are like little ski villages.
Lost their roads.
Where people live that have seasonal jobs at ski areas.
Right.
And, you know, just the, it was just disastrous. They lost homes. I know, personally know several people who lost their homes and businesses. You know, it was really, you know, quite an event. From central Vermont down in southern Vermont is really what got hit the worst.
Absolutely. Yep. So you guys diverted money there as well.
Well, so the band was out on tour, and this was right after the Champlain Valley Fair has their, the fair goes on over Labor Day. And so there was a stage up, and they said, they contacted them. I mean, I'm sure Richard was one who did the groundwork here, but... can we leave the stage up? And then kind of that community, that music community in Vermont kind of came together and really donated their services, not completely, but the people who could, the entities that could. And, you know, we raised as much money as we possibly could in order to, you know, put it back out there. And it ended up being, I think from the concert, it was 1.2. And then Waterwheel raised about another 60,000 from fans donating money via the webcast. We had like a messaging on the webcast.
Right.
And then on top of that, there was a couple of local companies that came in and said, you know, we want to give some money to this. One of them gave us, PC Construction gave us $100,000, which was one of the weirdest experiences of my life because I did not know these people at all. I did not know anyone who was at PC Construction.
And they're like, here's a big check.
An employee-owned company in Burlington, and they got in contact with me. Paige did a segment on WCAX, our TV station, and they got into contact with me, and I sort of was like, meh. You know, like, initially I kind of thought it was not real.
Right.
And I was like, you know, we're not looking for $1,000 sponsors, really. Like, well, I'll help you figure out a way to give that money. But, you know, the band doesn't do sponsorships.
Right.
So we're really looking for something meaningful. And they said, oh, come in and talk to us. So I went into their offices, and it was pretty corporate, which is not something that I'm very used to at this point, you know. And having never really had a real job interview myself, except for once when I interviewed for the Don Law Company here in Boston, my job before Fish, And I all of a sudden they started asking me all these questions, and I felt like I was getting interviewed for a job, and it started kind of freaking me out. And then they were like, after they were done, they were asking me all about the Water Wheel Foundation, obviously, and about the band. And they said, we want to give you $100,000. And I was like, I'm not an emotional girl, and I almost started crying. Wow. I got very, like, you know, I was like, really? You know,
that's
seriously?
Beautiful. That's a wonderful.
But the way that they thought about it, they said, we know we're not in the same, you know, bucket as you guys are, but they had employees all over the up and down the state, and they felt like we were the one entity that was coming in and sort of looking at the problem and trying to spread the money out across the state. And they said, we know the work that you do will then affect positively all of our employees.
That's wonderful. That's a good score right there.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. But it was very, very strange.
Well, and a great acknowledgement of decades of hard work in the community that while people see it, they don't always understand the mechanisms that it takes to do these things. And I think very inspiring. The fact that the band was willing to play the concert, you know, this was one of the, this was the
was
most
so
high profile Water Wheel event ever. And remarkably successful. So
you guys do pre-show events, right?
We do.
And what do those consist of?
So originally the pre-show event was just an idea that I came up with to celebrate our 15th anniversary. And I said, let's do something on the East Coast and something on the West Coast. Because we seemed to kind of at that point, like anything that we ever did that was sort of special was all very East Coast. Yeah. And we were going to play Bill Graham. And that venue has all these cool little rooms because it's such a huge building. And the folks from Another Planet are just so like-minded. And they really helped us pull it off. And then we went to MSG and did a similar thing. And they were so popular, these pre-show events. You know, I wasn't really sure how they were going to go. You never know when you're going to create an event. So popular, it was like, we have to keep doing these.
I've been to one pre-show event, and I want to go to more. But the one I went to was in Albany. And what did that benefit?
Well, that was sort of a little bit of a different thing. It wasn't a ticketed event.
Oh, okay.
But that money, that was right after Curveball.
Yes.
And so it just seemed like we were so close in proximity that we should do something in Albany.
Oh, okay.
So I called up Ben and Jerry's. So Ben and Jerry's is in South Burlington, right?
Yes.
All of the guys who work there are big fans in the marketing. I'm really on great terms. I'm so grateful for that relationship.
Yes.
So once a year in like January, so we go out for coffee and just come up with crazy ideas. And the crazier the idea, the more accepting they are of it. You know, the more they want to help, the more that they want in. So the 15th anniversary that we did.
Sometimes crazy sells, right? It's like the offbeat stuff that people
absolutely
notice.
Yeah. We did a cowbell event on Church Street, you know.
Oh, I heard about
with
that.
Fishman. It was so awesome. It was so awesome. I was like, okay, so the band's always, has always been like, you know, there's all these running jokes, right? So there's always been like some sort of like little joke about breaking a Guinness Book of World Records.
Yes.
So I go online and I'm looking, like I want to do something in Burlington to celebrate our anniversary, and Ben and Jerry's is in on the idea. Do some sort of event on Church Street, right? So I'm go to Guinness Book of World Records, and I'm going down musical instruments, and I'm like, cowbells. And it was like, at the time, it was like 638 people or some number like that. So I get in touch with Fish, and I ask him if he, you know, would be willing to get involved in a
lead
cowbell
a
event. And he says,
of course.
How many people, what's the Guinness Book of World Records? And I'm like, you know, 630 or whatever it was. You know, it was pretty low. And he was like, Yeah. I think that'll probably work, right? We can probably break that.
Yeah.
I say, yeah, I think I can get 600 people to come down to Church Street to see you play the cowbell. Like, yeah, no problem. But then he put together a band, and they played like a 45-minute set on Church Street, and it was hilarious. And there were 3,000 people there.
All armed with cowbells?
Yeah.
That must have made the music special, Elsa.
It was great. Well, and it was also like the Church Street Marketplace, like, pitched in, you know, Ben and Jerry's pitched in big time. The Flynn pitched in. They did the ticketing for it. They ran the ticketing for it. So it was like a really great community event, and it was really fun, and it just... You know, when you come up with this crazy idea and then you see it happen, you just laugh, you know?
Yes.
And you're just so grateful that people think that these, you know, opportunities.
People want to be involved. People want to be, you know, and if they can be helping at the same time, that's like a reason to get off the couch, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. What brought people up.
You guys are figuring out how to make people do that, and that's incredible. And you know, also with a good cause and a good result.
Well, it's really the fans that are incredible versus
that's a fact.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Yes. Yeah.
They do totally. A great job of making us all look good.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm about to ask, you know, call to action kind of thing. What can we do as fans? But before I ask that, I have to ask you about Gamehenge. Gamehenge, the mythical world, the religion that follows fish around, has been associated with Waterwheel on stickers and on merch. And I'm just wondering how that came about and how that's working out for you guys.
Well, so back when that actually went down, it would have been Amy Skelton at the helm of the merchandising versus me for Waterwheel. So I'm not exactly privy to the details, but my understanding, my institutional Fish Inc. understanding of the situation is that, you know, Trey just never wanted Gamehenge to become a commodity. He wanted it. If we were going to use it as a company, he wanted it to have some meaningful, charitable representation, I guess. So Waterwheel took the trademark and has been using it as one of our merch items.
Is Gamehenge trademark just the name, or is it trademark associated with a logo, too? I can't quite remember. There's a Gamehenge logo?
There is a logo, yeah. There's a logo. Oh. Yeah, it's the one that's on the
Gamehenge Ranger t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
That we've
oh.
been running yeah. since the inception okay. of Waterwheel.
So just that, I guess that just the word in the font or whatever. Okay, interesting. That's great. I've always hoped, as a huge fan of Gamehenge, to see Gamehenge come out in some other form, whether it's a book or a movie or at, you know, long time ago, potentially a video game, but maybe it never will.
I believe you were not alone in that hope. I don't know if it ever will. That remains to be seen.
It does remain to be seen. Well, thank you guys so much. But I really do want to make sure that we can direct anyone who's gotten interested in Waterwheel to the right place. Like, what should we do at a show, or what should we do right now, or how can we get involved?
So here's a dream of mine. Everybody walks in the door and goes to the Waterwheel table and gives a dollar.
Perfect.
Because little known fact that the band actually gives us a dollar for every ticket that they sell.
Oh, wow. We should spread the word. We should spread that
so
word.
So if the fans then again match that, we would make... So usually we're about $500,000 from the band, because that's the number of tickets that get sold on a year. That's nice. This is definitely an average.
Uh-huh.
And the fans already donate up to about that much.
Wow.
So we could get...
You're saying double it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I'm saying
we could go from a million to 1.5 with everyone walking through the door and taking a dollar to the table.
Putting $1 at the table.
Online at fish.com Waterwheel, there's a button where you can donate. There's a line of merchandise that's always been sustainable. Organic cotton, hemp, bamboo. We mentioned leading by example before, but I think it's really important. Even the table coverings and the backdrops that we have are made from post-consumer recycled plastic. And, you know, we've actually run those for 10, 15 years now. They held up way better than we anticipated.
Wow.
But again, you know, we've got four of those, but you display them to hundreds of thousands of people and you show this as a possibility. So I think...
You don't have to buy plastic for your kids' birthday party coverings.
Right. You know, in addition to the fiscal component, I think it's about taking that personal responsibility and understanding our footprints and what we do and how that affects others and inspires our children and those around us.
That's great. Yeah. So, yeah, please donate. Please volunteer. Please check out Waterwheel, fish.com/waterwheel. And amazing job you guys are doing. Thank you so much for, you know, you hear this all the time. Thank you for your service, but I really mean it in your guys' case.
Well, thanks, thank you very much.
Thanks also for coming up to my hotel here in Boston and doing this interview with me. Because, you know, we're always on the road and running around, and you guys carved an hour out of your day. So thank you very much.
Happy to.
Thanks.
All right.
Osiris.
This podcast is In The Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.